Mari Tivan and Mal Lane are fairly typical students who, in addition to studying, also freelance. We then delve further into the subject of auditions and end with my asking about their long-term goals. You know, the reason why I wanted to interview the two of you is that I'm really inspired by both of you. And it's just because of your wanting it so much, your hunger, you know, the love for what you do. And because of loving what you do, being willing to really work really hard at it. Because I've seen so many students who I think, you know, there's some students who are maybe not so talented, but I've also seen students who are really talented that are just really lazy and don't work that hard. And to see people who have had to overcome difficulties and just work really hard and who are doing really well, that's really inspiring to me. And that's, you know, I wish everybody worked the way you two do. So now you're going to Juilliard, and you're very, very excited about that. You're studying with one of the great trombone players in the world and one of the great teachers in the world, Joel Essie. And Mari, you're studying with Klaus Schuberg, who for sure, he doesn't play trumpet anymore, but he's, in my mind, he's one of the at least five top teachers in the world. I mean, he's just a great, great teacher. And you're on your way. Mal, you're going to be doing a lot of freelance work, I'm sure, in New York, and some jazz playing too. And Mari, you started out, you played with the European Youth Orchestra? Is that correct?
You mean the Norwegian National
Youth? No, I heard you in Portugal.
Oh, I heard a rehearsal. Gustav Mahler Jugendorchester.
Oh, that was it. Yeah, Gustav Mahler. Yeah, Youth Orchestra, Jugend Orchestra. Yeah. And you've played with the Stockholm Chamber Orchestra a number of times?
Swedish Chamber Orchestra a few times.
Okay, I'm going to get one of these right, which is a terrific orchestra. And you with the Arctic Philharmonic?
Yeah, I've been there as well.
I got that one right.
Yeah.
Okay. And a number of other orchestras. So, I mean, you've already got a pretty good freelance career going while you're doing your studies. So, you know, you're obviously on your way. Playing in those orchestras, did it seem different to you than playing in, well, I won't say youth orchestra, but let's say like the school orchestra in Oslo or if you play in one in Frankfurt?
You mean if it's different?
Yeah, just, I mean, the mentality or what the feeling. Is it easier to play? Is it more difficult to play? Is it nerve-wracking or is it fun?
For me, it's really fun. I really love it. In some ways, I think it's easier also. Like playing with really good players makes it easier to play. And when people really know what they're doing, then it's really easy. Sometimes in a school orchestra, people come unprepared, haven't listened to the piece really, and don't know when they're supposed to get in or stuff like that. So in some ways, playing with professional orchestras is so much more fun and so much easier. For me, I've had a lot of stress in auditions, but playing in orchestras is really the most fun I have. And it's totally different than standing in front of a jury. So I really enjoy it.
We had, it's not out yet, but Eddie and I did an interview with Carol Jansch, who's the tubist with the Philadelphia Orchestra. And she got the job when she was still 20, and she was a student at University of Michigan. And she, before she got the job, she ended up playing with the orchestra some as a substitute for somebody who I think had left. And I said, what was that like? You know, you're 20 years old and all of a sudden you're sitting in one of the great orchestras in the world. And I forget her exact answer, but basically it was that it was easy, you know. And then she said what was hard was going back and playing in the university orchestra because then she felt like she was out of tune and there were, you know, there are certain difficulties. But when you're playing with really good people, you know, if there's a problem, you know it's yourself and you know how you can correct it. So anyway, that's interesting how that works. Eddie, anything you'd like to say?
I wanted to ask both Mal and Mari, what are some of the things, because I'm thinking of younger students, undergraduates that want to go on to grad school, that want to do auditions. What are some of the things that you did to feel more comfortable with just playing with auditioning? Because I'm thinking of Mal's story, and she's told me and with more inflection, and it's pretty fascinating being in that room. What'd you say? It's like a prison, the audition room.
Yeah, that it was just, like slaughterhouse.
Slaughterhouse execution. Yeah, it was just intense. So still being able to go in there and deliver. And for one thing, Mal, she has kind of a interesting how do you say, perspective on her own playing. She does a great job. So I'm sure that the audition was great. But to be able to survive in that kind of situation, I know some of the stuff that Mal's done because she goes to Idaho State. I'm at Idaho State, and she plays a lot. But I'm curious, Mari, what are some things that you have done just to get used to performing and being in the audition situation, whether it's mental or playing or performing, etc.?
I think just doing it a lot helps. I think, in general, I've been quite negative. And whenever there's something I'm not satisfied with, if I split a note or it's out of tune, then I really focus on that. And then everything just falls apart. Before, it was like that. I think it helped me to lower my expectations. Really, I go into the audition and really I want to do my best, but not to expect anything. Because if I expect a lot, if I expect that I will play as well as play the same way as I do in the practice room, I can't expect that, at least not in the beginning. And I think that helps a lot. For me, I was shaking a lot. I was like I had problems standing because my knees were shaking so much that I felt that I was going to fall down. And I think also trying to expect not to be nervous or trying to stop the nervosity from coming is not possible, and just accept that it's coming and do what I can do in the moment. I think for me, maybe I haven't had a lot of good audition experience, but one audition that went quite okay was an audition that where I didn't think I wasn't prepared. I just didn't care if it would go bad or wrong. I didn't know the jury. They didn't know me, and I would never meet them again. So I have had no expectations, and then I just played, and it went much better than I really could imagine. But for me, working on concentration and focus, and even if thoughts come during the audition when something happens, trying to get back on track and just forget that something happened and just focus on what's coming. And trying to have fun, even though that's really difficult in such a situation.
You know, thinking of you and your legs quivering and being afraid that you're going to, you know, almost fall over, the extreme opposite of you. And I don't know if I told you this story or not, is Glenn Fishtel, who is sort of a legend in his own right, not only for being a great trumpet player. He was first with the San Francisco Symphony for many, many years. But before then, just for how unbelievably relaxed he is. And he actually, behind a screen, he actually fell asleep during an audition, and he won the audition for the Kansas City Philharmonic. So that's sort of the extreme opposite. Now, if you could get a balance between those two, I think you're okay. Eddie, you were thinking that Mal has something to say about that, or you have something to say?
Yeah, Mal, what did you do? What are some things you did? Other than I'll say one thing because she won't. So, Like most schools, we have the, you know, weekly, the recital hour, the general recital hour where students go up and play for each other. And I remember when I was at the University of Utah, you would get one time per semester and that was it. On the other hand, let's talk to Mal about what she did.
For 2 years, my junior and senior year, I played on every single recital hour.
Every single one.
Yeah, every single one. I think the only time I missed one was when I was in New York, you know, doing the actual audition, to get used to performing. I mean, Mari already said, you know, you have to do it a lot. Because I do a lot of rock climbing, and one of the things in rock climbing is you have to control as many risks as you can. You know, and because there are always going to be things that you can't control. Performing is a lot like rock climbing, you know. You're going to be on some crumbly granite, you know, that might suddenly break if you grab it. You know, that's something that you can't control. You don't know if it's going to break off or not. You don't know how the adrenaline and other stress chemicals like cortisol are going to affect your chops and the muscle tissue in your mouth and things like that. You know, those are things that sometimes you can't control, you know, the release of those chemicals. And so all of the other aspects of the audition, you know, you should try to probably control. And sometimes nervousness can be related to your degree of preparation. And so if you can be as prepared as you can, certainly not over, you know, prepared. Don't over practice. I made that mistake all the time. But I played in every recital hour because I wanted to feel comfortable performing, you know, in front of other people all the time and sort of get over, you know, stage fright and things like that. So that was one of the controlled risks, you know, is constantly performing in front of people and practicing things over and over again. When I was in the pre-screening stage of my auditions, I would do, I mean, hundreds of takes. I submitted like maybe 45 minutes, 30 or 45 minutes worth of footage, you know. I basically did the same material, give or take a few pieces for the schools that I applied to. And it was like, you know, 30 to 45 minutes. But when I put my SD card in my computer to, you know, edit and do all that kind of stuff, it was about 241 hours of footage. I mean, I was just doing take after take after take after take, you know, repetition, just like brutal bunker mentality, trying to do it over and over again.
So I'm going to insert something in here real quick. So do you think maybe, I'm her teacher, so I can do this kind of stuff. I'm not her trombone teacher. I'm her theory teacher. So do you think maybe when you got to your audition and you felt like you failed, maybe it's because when you did the pre-screenings, you did 20 gajillion recordings and tried to find the perfect one. So, you know, like I really like what Mario was saying, that she would stick the phone in her pocket.
Yeah, that's a good strategy.
So she would get, you know, an actual real representation of what you did.
Mario, tell me if I'm right, but I remember you told me that you'd do some climbing as well.
It's some years ago. I did it when I was younger. I actually did it to try to strengthen my hands after my all years of not using them. They was probably in 2013, 14, 15, maybe. But I really liked it, but I kind of practiced instead after.
Yeah. You know, just speaking about auditions, a real hero for both myself and Eddie is Nick Norton, who played with the Utah Symphony for 38 years. And Nick was second trumpet with the orchestra for I forget how many years, and then I think 11 years. And then the principal trumpet came open, and so he auditioned for that. And he did 9 auditions for friends or for people that he knew as a preparation for this actual audition. And the last one he did, he was playing as an extra with this group that I used to play with called Summit Brass that just had great, great players. And so he did an audition in this sort of like a hotel room or a condominium. And for myself and Gail Williams, who was playing with the Chicago Symphony, who's one of the great horn players in the world, and Alan Dean and Ray Mace. And he had never met them before. And that was like about 2 or 3 days before his audition for the Utah Symphony. And I thought he played okay, but he was really depressed afterwards. He said he just played terrible. These great players, he was so nervous in front of them. And 3 days later, he won the job with the Utah Symphony because he said auditioning for the Utah Symphony was so much easier than playing for these, you know, three iconic brass players, you know. And so I think he said that some of the times he would audition for people, do his mock auditions as a preparation. Sometimes for people where if he didn't play well, he knew that they were the type of people that would say, boy, he doesn't sound very good, you know, so that the pressure was on. He didn't make it really easy for himself, so that when he went in to actually audition for the orchestra, it was a little bit more relaxed than it would normally be. So I have a story to tell about Mari, and I think I might have this a little bit wrong. Don't worry, Mari, it's not a bad story. But it was either your first or second lesson. So I taught you at the Norwegian Music Academy for 1 year, which was my last year and your first year. And when you came in, it was either your first or your second lesson, and you said, I want you to be as hard on me as you can. And I had the feeling that Mal is the same way, is that you're really, really good at getting criticisms, and you want criticisms from people as a way of improving your playing. The question is, how good are you at taking compliments?
Oh, That's a good one.
That's a tough one. I know the answer for Mari, even if she's not going to be willing to say it. But I'll go with you first, Mal. How are you at taking compliments?
Well, I didn't realize until that phone call with Joe after my audition that my own perception of my playing is very different, you know, from everyone else's. I don't know. I mean, a lot of times people say those things and it's like, oh, great, thanks, you know, but in my heart, I know that you're just trying to be nice, you know. I mean, that's, you know, I should probably spend some time on, you know, meditating on that or whatever this summer to just figure out how to be better at it. I mean, you know what sucks is the movie Whiplash. There's a line in there that actually really resonates with me. And it's horrible. Like, you know, when the abusive band director says, good job is like the most harmful two words. And I kind of agree with that a little bit because then you're like complacent. You know, you're not like very motivated to work harder, get better after you hear that. At least I might not be if someone says, oh, you know, good job. It's just kind of like, well, what can I do to improve, though? You know, because I don't want to stay the same. If you're staying the same, you're getting worse. You know what I mean? So, I don't know. I mean, I just am always looking to get better. And so, you know, I want new perspectives. I want criticisms. And I want people to say, as Joe said to me in one of our lessons, you're doing that completely wrong. In the moment, there's like a little sting, you know, like, oh, well, guess what? I knew what to work on. Always looking to get better.
I remember once years ago when I was a young player in L.A., in my 20s, I guess, and I was with my really good friend, Ron Kidd, who was a trumpet player and then quit the trumpet, and he's an excellent writer now. And somebody gave me a compliment about a concert, and I said, well, no, actually, I really didn't play that well, and you know, that sort of thing, I guess, as we all sort of do. And after the person left, Ron said, you really shouldn't do that, because what you're doing is, I know you're trying to be humble or whatever, but what you're doing is denigrating what that person is saying, and you're saying that that person, what he's saying, doesn't make sense. So it's, you just have to suck it up and say, thanks very much. And I've really, that's hard to do when you don't feel like you've played particularly well and somebody compliments you and they're very well-meaning, you know, when they compliment you, to just say thank you. But that's tough. How about you, Mari? How do you deal with that?
Yeah, I think it's really difficult. I think I'm just sometimes being weird if someone gives me a compliment. I don't know what to say because in some ways I just think, no, it wasn't good at all. There's so much I could do better. And I think maybe they don't mean it. Maybe they just feel that they have to say something nice, because you wouldn't go up to someone and say, you played really well today, really bad today. and like, people say nice things just to be nice, because that's the polite thing to do. So for me, it's been really hard to believe it when someone says something nice. But at the same time, I think being so negative, it makes me work really hard, but it also stresses me when I have to play in front of people, because I have the same judgment when I play sometimes as I have when people try to give me a compliment. I try to work on it, but it's really difficult, because inside I think, just there, just being nice, trying to cheer me up, even though I played really bad.
I think we all remember the bad concerts more than the good concerts. I mean, I certainly can remember like three really bad concerts or more, and I can't really remember the good concerts. And the great tennis player Billie Jean King, she said, and this is not an absolute quote, but it was something like this: "Winning is temporary, and losing is forever." And that's a pretty negative way of looking at things, but we do tend to remember the bad concerts or the big mistakes more than, you know, I used to think, you know, if I played a really good concert, well, I survived, you know, rather than, hey, that was good.
Please join us in the bonus room, where we talk about times when things worked really well with the playing, the perfect note of Joel Essey, and a look to the future. If you enjoyed this interview, please feel free to leave a review.